Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, hello and welcome to another episode of Rahala Stapa with me, Richard Herring. It's lovely here at the Leicester Square Theatre at the moment. The guest this week is Emily Atack. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you like these shows, hey, you can come and probably see one live. We're touring the country in 2019 and probably beyond that. We're also here at the Leicester Square Theatre. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out all about that. And hey, why not support us by becoming a monthly badger? Go to our brand new website, rahalastapa.co.uk. You'll find lots of stuff about the show, but also there's a lovely paywall you can get behind very cheaply and see all those behind the scenes videos. There's hundreds of those now. They're all about 5 minutes long, or lots of other extras, plus some of my stand-up shows. There's going to be lots of stuff there. Maybe I'll do some question and answer sessions. Who knows what I'm going to do back there? Only people who are paying. That's the people who'll know. That will help us to fund the filming of this show, which is exorbitantly expensive. Thank you very much for watching. Let's sit back and enjoy Richard Herring's LSTP. Rahalastapa. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has just sold one of his livers for Jesus. Not feeling that well, actually. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much, hello! Oh, you're much better than last week's audience. There was a bald guy in the front row last week, didn't crack a smile, mate. So, he was good. John Ronson was good, wasn't he? Obsessed with porn, he is. Oh, I didn't do it as well as I did in the timing was all off. So, welcome to Richard Herring's Long Sally Tall podcast. That's a terrible name. I was hanging around with the Goodies the other week. I don't know if you remember the Goodies. They would drive a Trandum. Who remembers the Goodies? Eating Spangles. They call it Rahalastapa. So that's going to catch on. Let's see what I've got for you. Oh, no, I should have said last week, and I'm sure you'll have noticed the difference between the 2 weeks already here. I'm on a diet this year. I've
I've already, I said I look thinner than last week. You were here last week, weren't you? And it's lost a lot of weight. I did a poo in the interval. And it's, I was kind of hoping to, because they used to alternate between fat rich and thin rich presenting these shows, which gave me half the workload. Obviously, it's two different people, as many of you know I am. But it's fat rich has been presenting this show for quite a few series now. In fact, looking back at the John Ronson one, I was thin rich when I last did John Ronson. That was the last time I was properly thin. That's how long ago it was. So my plan is to, by the end of the series, thin rich will be presenting the series. And I will wear the suit that I wore in 2015. Not going to happen. I've lost 10 pounds so far in 2019. I was very fat. So I was just drinking a lot of beer for some reason. So it's... But it's been a dry January and a dry 4 days of February. 35 days. No, I'm not counting. So we'll see if that comes to pass. And some of you have looked at the last episode already and said, ha-ha, you idiot. It did not work. It didn't work. I'm cross. I've got a new car. I've mentioned this before to the audience. And I live in the countryside now. So it's very... And it's been unpleasant weather. So dirt gets splashed all over the car all the time. There's no point in washing the car because you'll just go out again and it'll get dirty again. And I was in Waitrose Car Park in Hitchin. It's usually... And it's not like Harpenden. That place is full of cunts. But Hitchin's usually all right. Yeah, it's usually all right. Hertfordshire-based comedy. There's some people in Hertfordshire going fucking mad for this shit. And I did see my car sticking. As I walked into it, I said to my daughter, you can see which one our car is, because it was quite dirty. And I was getting... I had two kids. I was on my own. I was tired. I was putting them in the car. I was trying to feed my son at the same time. I was very harassed. And a man, a kind of middle-aged Hitchin man, came past. He said, excuse me. And I'm a polite man. I thought he maybe recognised me from my Radio 4 work. And... he said, how's anyone meant to read that number plate? I said, I've been thinking the same thing. And I wasn't angry with him to begin with. And then I thought, that's quite a lot of front, isn't it? To basically go, your car's fucking dirty, mate. What are you going to do about it? Punch you in the face, you fucking old fuck. I'm very cross today. I'm very cross last week and today. Very cross. So, I think as you get older, I'm worried about it, because I think as you get... he's probably my age, to be honest, but he looked to me, he might have been in his 60s. And you go, what point does that mental filter go where you don't think, maybe I won't just say every single fucking thing that's gone into my head? I mean, you know, this is my job, but I don't do it in real life. So, anyway, our guest this week is probably best known for portraying Slimer in the Keith and Paddy Picture Show, which is my favourite television program. So, and we can imagine how hideous this guest is going to be. Have all the actors in the world were chosen to play Slimer, which isn't even a human being. So let's see what she looks like. Will you please welcome the amazing Emily Attack, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, my God! Welcome. Sit down. Pick up a microphone. I should have said that. You have to talk into that microphone.
This is very strange for me, kind of scenario.
You're going to have to get used to it if you're going on a stand-up tour. You're going to use a handheld mic on stage?
No, I've got one of those little things.
You've got a Madonna mic.
Yeah, I feel like Ariana Grande when I wear it.
Yeah, that's nice. We had those. We had Lee and Herring. When we did Lee and Herring, we had those pretentious mics. And then I thought,
like it.
Oh, come on, you've got to be real, talking to a big... phallic microphone.
I think you feel like, you know, you've made it if you get to sort of do that with your ear. Like, yeah.
I used to do, you might work. I used to pretend I was Captain Scarlet and go, that was my joke with it. Less cool than you. Not Ariane Grande. Anyway, so Slimer. How did you get chosen to portray Slimer? That is not fair.
I can't, but this is hilarious. Can't believe that this is even a thing. Lee said to me, Lee Francis, Keith Lemon, he said...
Why is not his real name, Keith Lemon?
Do you know, the amount of people that go, so, right, okay, is Keith, like, is that who he is? Or is that, no, he's Lee Francis, Keith Lemon is the character. And they go... All right, so he's Keith. No, he's Lee. That Keith Lemon is his character. Anyway, I have to explain that to people all the time. It's hilarious. So, he said to me, no one will play Slimer. I don't know who to ask. I'm like, I'll do it. I'll definitely do it. And he was like, I thought you'd be all like dead vain though, not want to like dress all green and shit. No, fine. Absolutely.
What do you have to do to be Slimer?
Just literally do this.
You are good. You're better than I thought you'd be.
I've never even seen Ghostbusters. I was weirdly really good at it.
That's pretty much what he does. So
it's fine. Thanks.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Well, we have seen you recently. We'll talk about. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things to talk about. But we'll talk about I'm a Celebrity first, which my audience don't watch because they don't watch it.
But this series was apparently a really good one.
It was a very good series.
Apparently, it was the best.
They're aware of what it is, but they wouldn't watch it.
Highest rated series, apparently. If you
came. Spoiler alert for anyone who's got it on series record. Wait. Anyone who's waiting a couple of years just to really savour. You came second.
I came second.
And Football Manager.
Was hoping for an applause, but don't worry.
Yeah, second.
Thank you.
How was it? Because, I mean you've been asked all the questions about I'm a Celebrity, whether it's real, whether it's. But is it an enjoyable thing to do, really? I mean, you seem to have fun this year.
Yeah, do you know, you can't really say enjoyable in the sense of the day-to-day life of it. You know, you're starving hungry. There aren't takeaway pizzas coming in, you know, every half an hour like everyone thinks there is. It's not a studio. It really is what it seems on television. It's very difficult, but it's more about kind of how you kind of do that. I'm not going to use the word journey, but I feel like I'm about to say it. I'm really sorry.
You did feel like you did have a bit of a journey in this film.
It's the only way to describe it. It's more about that experience, we'll use that word. It's the experience, and that's the enjoyment of it. That's you find out so much about yourself. Things that you didn't know, and it's kind of
You seem to. I mean, what everyone sort of says about you in this series is that you went in, you had your confidence a bit dented before you went in through relationships and whatever.
This kind of
rebuilt you a bit. Would that be?
It really did. Yeah. I genuinely said this yesterday. I actually really miss being in there because there was something about being in that environment where you're so completely stripped bare of the stresses of everyday life and you're taken away from the real world. And I can honestly say it was the most liberating thing ever because I just felt so protected in there. I felt like I was the happiest I've ever been because I didn't have the everyday normal stresses of everyday life.
Sure.
I just didn't have to worry about anything apart from, you know, having to light a fire and, you know,
stay alive.
Stars for camp to get meals. Everything, you go back to basics. And as a human being in this day and age, if you ever get the opportunity to do anything like that, which, you know, not everyone gets to do the jungle.
You can just go in a wood somewhere.
Yeah. Just starve yourself in a wood. Yeah.
Don't take your phone with you, you'll be fine. It's a big decision, right, to go in, to make that. Were you nervous about it? I mean, that you're weighing it up. Some people go into these things and it destroys them and destroys their career. Usually the racist ones, to be fair. So as long as you're confident you can keep your racism bottled up for 2 weeks, it's
okay. I had
okay.
a real word with myself. That was it. I just kind of thought, well, do you know what? I'm not racist. I'm not nasty. I'm not bitchy, and I'm just not a dickhead. I just know I'm not that much of a bellend that I would make myself look like a bellend. And I remember saying to ITV when I had the meeting, I said, I don't look like a dick and blah, blah, blah. And they said, thing is, you're only going to look like a dick if you are a dick.
Yeah.
It's not Big Brother where they're out, you know, they're out to literally bleed you dry for that kind of thing. It's not really like that. And I just thought,
wouldn't tell you if you were a dick because they want you to go on if you are a dick.
They go,
you're not a dick, it's fine, you'll be fine. Go on in, Noel Edmonds, it's fine, you're not a dick. Everyone loves you.
No.
Did you ever wake up and find Noel Edmonds just sort of staring at you, standing over you, staring at you? Did that ever happen?
Do you know, I've got to defend him here. I feel really bad for him. After watching it back, I feel he did. He's such a nice guy, and we had so. What do you mean? Do you hate him?
Oh, you know, I've got a grudging respect for the murders he committed. But it's it's apart from that. Oh no, sorry, no, I'm thinking of Jack the Ripper. I got confused. That wasn't him. I got confused.
Oh,
I think we covered Ben, right?
Uh,
so, No, I think he's done some slightly dickish things. He had this sort of cancer machine that he was telling cancer sufferers they should buck up their ideas and try his cancer machine. He's done odd things.
I didn't hear about the cancer machine.
No, he probably doesn't brag about it.
Oh.
You're right, as long as you haven't got cancer, he won't tell you about it, but if you've got it, you ain't sharp about the thing. I just think it's a lot of people who work at show business think they're cool and not dickish people. Mm. And there is no hiding place in the jungle for that. You are a dick, it's going to come out. So yeah. I think Noel Edmonds, for me, feels like the kind of person who thinks he isn't a dick. Incorrectly. That's just my opinion. And I'm sure he feels the
lovely.
Same about
he was
me.
Lovely to me.
I wouldn't go in there because, you know, I've got an angry side. I think people... I bottle it up.
Are you precious?
But you mean it seemed to... It was a year where there wasn't many... Everyone seemed to get on and it wasn't...
Oh,
there was
no genuinely, we really, really got on. And I always say, I don't think I would have done half as well in there if there was an arsehole in there that was upsetting me. I think in that kind of environment, it either brings out the best in you or the worst in you. And luckily, it brought out this side to me I didn't kind of really know that I had. Because there's no booze in there.
Yeah.
So, like, that sounds awful, but there's no booze. There's none of those kind of things that change your personality at all. So it's almost like you're a 9-year-old kid again, and just with genuine happiness. The slightest thing will make you happy. If you win a chocolate biscuit, you know, you're so thrilled. It's the only thing you're going to eat all day, but you're so happy about it. You become a 9-year-old again.
Okay.
So I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, did you anticipate coming out and, you know, what was your feelings as you were coming out of the jungle? You think it's going to... Do you aware it was going to lead to lots of opportunities, or you're worried you'd been...
Do you know,
different ways.
I think as an actress, actor, we have to say now, I think it's the decision that you make with something like that, it's a really big one because, as you say, it can go one way or the other. And in this industry, I feel like the industry is changing a lot. And it got to the point, I've been asked to do The Jungle for the last 3 years. And I was kind of, I was battling with it. I was thinking, oh, I don't know if it's the right thing, but you know, I'm fucking skint. And and I got to a point where I thought, right, I'm not trying to be the next Keira Knightley. That's not what I'm trying to be. Yet I'm not a reality star. So I had to kind of think, well, if I do this, I have to sort of afterwards carve my own path afterwards. I don't want to do that thing of, oh God, it sounds so indulgent, kind of going, oh, yeah. It's such weird decisions you have to make in this kind of industry. But you never kind of know what the best thing to do next is in the industry, especially as a young woman. It's really, really difficult. And over the last 10, 11 years, I'd been, you know, playing these glamorous kind of roles. Great fun. Great. Yeah, I got to a point where I thought, right, I'm tired of that robotic motion thing of going to auditions, castings, reading the lines, doing that. My mum calls it the revolving door audition. When you go in, you go, right, thank you, back out again, and you just never hear anything again. And I lost my sense of fun with it, and I just thought, I need some excitement again in my life, and I want to just kind of flip everything on its head and just see what happens if I start saying yes to things like The Jungle.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, right, sod it. I'm going to say yes and just kind of see what happens from there. Thank Christ I said yes. it was the best decision I've ever made. And I didn't know for 1 minute or guess just how kind of well it was going to go. I'm so lucky that the people that I was in there with, they were all amazing. And as I say, you know, we all brought that out the best in each other. And I came out... And I've got all these incredible opportunities and all the doors that I thought were going to be shut in my face in terms of acting and things like that, they're bloody more open than ever.
Hooray.
Now they all want to know.
So that's how you audition, is you go in a jungle for 3 weeks and show people you're a nice person.
But what I think it shows is that the industry is changing, because a few years ago, that would have been, the snobbery would have been, you know, well, oh, she's done The Jungle, we're not going to see her for this casting now. We're not, oh no, you can't do a drama now, you can't do that. But it's just not the case for some reason this
good.
Year.
Good, what have you, are you allowed to talk about the things you've been offered? I know some of them are semi-secret or rumours.
I've got my agent in the audience, I don't know what I'm allowed to say. I've got the Walker's gig with Gary Lineker.
So you've got Walker's crisps. Do you get free crisps for life off of that?
Just get to eat crisps with Gary Lineker. Brilliant. I've just been confirmed for an acting gig the other day that I'm so excited about. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it yet, but it was something that I would have auditioned for before, and I wouldn't have got a look in. The feedback was when I went for castings. God, this is so indulgent. Sorry, it's like a therapy session. The feedback I got was that I was either too sort of well known for roles or not well known enough. So I just sort of thought, well, I might as well choose something a bit more extreme and then just see what happens from that. So yeah, and yeah, it's all good.
You put it from a big showbiz family. I know your mum a little bit, yeah. Kate Robbins.
Yeah.
Did you, were you aware she was in the Eurovision Song Contest? You must be.
Yes.
Can you sing the song she sang?
No, I have no idea how it's sang. But were they called Prima Donna?
Prima Donna.
Can you sing?
I think if, I've learned their name in case it ever comes up on Pointless, because I think, I don't think anyone remembers Prima Donna or this song.
All right.
If there's a place in your heart for me, then there's a room in my place for you, because I've got love enough.
Oh, love enough.
I've got love enough. And they're all kind of wearing Bucks Fizz style. I don't know if it was the year after Bucks Fizz,
yeah.
But the boys are wearing that kind of, you know, children's presenter kind of Bucks Fizz stuff.
I remember mum always gets a bit narky if you say Bucks Fizz. She says, don't mention that around me.
They're on, she's big. I think she might have done two Eurovision Song Contests. Am I right about that? She
was I don't know.
She wrote Surprise Surprise. I mean, yeah, I should have, thinking about it, I should have got her on. I love her stuff.
I know what you did.
Surprise Surprise, she wrote. Surprise, I can sing her. I bet
she
no.
She had a number two hit. I don't know what I'm doing sitting here.
She did voices on Spitting Image.
She did Euro Trash as well.
Euro Trash. Yeah.
That was always weird watching that with my mates. I would be like, did you watch Euro Trash last night? No, because it's my mum going, oh, yeah. Oh. Weird.
She's a cracker. You come from that family of like seemingly about a billion very attractive women and Ted Robbins. That seems to be. He got a lot of the excess left over. How is Ted? Is he okay?
He's well. He's over the heart attack is and he? All
yeah.
is well.
Good.
Yeah.
We love Ted. We love Ted Robbins. But Paul McCartney is. Well, I'm trying to work out what relation Paul McCartney is to you.
He's my grandma's first cousin, and he my grandma essentially raised him. His mum died when he was very young, my grandma raised him, and they actually started. The Beatles in my grandparents' garage.
Right.
And then they started, but it was Paul and John. They called themselves the Nurk twins. They were like this little duo. And my grandparents owned a pub and they said, oh, you know, my grandma introduced Paul to the ukulele and taught him how to play it. And she said, oh, you know, you sound really good. You should play at the pub tonight. So the Nurk twins started playing at the pub, and then,
they did all right, they did okay.
They did all right. I mean, my mum just goes around saying, you know, Paul just brags about being my cousin, which is...
Does Paul pop round to see you in the house?
Do you know, he's a family man, and I grew up... He was such a massive part of my childhood. I had an amazing childhood with him. He was so lovely. Him and Linda, they would have us round for Sunday lunches and
vegetarian though.
Yeah. Forget it. I remember turning up once and he said, oh, you've just missed Michael Jackson. I was for fuck's sake. Normal Sunday lunch.
It's amazing. So is anyone in your family not a performer?
I don't No. I don't think any single one of us has ever had a proper job.
I mean, it's like a massive dynasty. I mean, like Robert Dawes, who I work with, is married to your aunt, is
yes,
that it?
Amy, yeah.
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 And there's a big age gap in that, the family. Your Ted is the oldest, is he?
It goes Ted, my mum, then Emma, Jane, Amy.
They were going some, your grandparents.
Yeah. Oh, that...
It's good when no one comes like 12 or 13 years after us. That's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, they're dead now, so that's weird to think about.
Okay, well, you don't have to think about the dead. I was thinking about them having sex while they were alive and vivid and still young enough to procreate. That's what I'm going home to think. That's my. If I get a porn video made, that is what it's going to. This was going to. What?
Oh God.
They're all siblings. It works for me. It's a back reference to last week, in case you think I'm weird. Right. So we'll give my best to your mum. I want to say she direct messaged me on Twitter and said, "Can I have a couple of comps to your gig tonight?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And then she didn't turn up. But I don't hold any grudges.
I'll tell you who is here though, and I've got to say this. So my sister, who's also my agent, she is here with her boyfriend, who their first ever date. They've been together for 7 years. It's not interesting for anyone else, but they've been together for 7 years, and their first ever date was to a Richard Herring gig.
That happens a lot.
Yeah, and they're here now, and they went to a Richard Herring gig. It was when they first like fell in love, and then they had a Domino's pizza in his car. Afterwards,
that's how you do it.
Yeah,
is that a euphemism? I work out what that would be. It sounds pretty good, extra large.
But yeah, they're here tonight.
Yeah,
so yeah.
It happens a lot because I think people come on the first date. The women see me and go, "Fuck, I could end up like someone like that." I'm just the nearest available person.
Oh my God, he looks a bit like you.
Does
not
he?
Even kidding. Yeah, a little bit.
I could have been in the Dynasty.
You got to audition first.
in between, as we talked to some of the in-between, I talked to Joe and Damon at the Bristol Slapstick Festival recently. So was that your first big break, the in-betweeners?
Oh, yeah, completely. I was 17 and my parents had divorced and I looked at my sister and I said, right, should we just sack this off and get out of it because this is rubbish? So we moved into this flat and we had no money. I was 17. My sister was 15, 16. And she was like, how are we going to pay for it? I was like, I'm going to become a famous actress. It's fine. And I banged a few doors down and I auditioned for this thing called Baggy Trousers.
Yes.
And I auditioned for that. And I also at the time auditioned for something called Coming of Age, which was on BBC Three. And I was offered both roles and I had to choose between...
You made the right choice.
Yeah. Well, but what I did was I went back to my flat that day, my grotty little flat. You know, I was a baby. I was 17, and all my mates were sitting around, just like smoking, drinking, whatever. And I was like, right, everyone, read both of these scripts and tell me what's the funniest one. And they went, that one, Baggy Trousers. So I was like, right, I'll say yes to that one then. Thank Christ. And so I got that, and I did that for 3 years. Till I was 21, and that just changed my life forever.
And what were the boys in it? Were they like the characters?
Well, the weird thing was, what people don't really know is that at the time they were so much older than what they were playing.
Yeah.
So I was 17, like the normal age, but I was playing a year older than them. But they in real life were like approaching 30.
Wow.
Yeah. They were in the makeup truck every day, like shaving their chests to every inch of their life, like scraping their chests and their faces. Cause they were like approaching 30. So yeah. they were silly and fun and everything, but you know, they were a bit mature. Were they a bit mature?
No.
Nah.
It was a great series. I was talking about with Damon who created it, but with Ian.
Yeah.
It was exactly certainly a boy's memory of school. All the boys were silly idiots and all the girls were quite cool and together, which I think is true of sort of sixth form, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely my kind of memory of school. I mean, the sort of comments I get and I have to go, thank you, are, but the thing is, though, reason why you're so good in that is because I just remember I fancy girls like you, you know, with the tits and the air, and I'm like... Thank you. That's nice. but apparently, yeah, it resonated with people and people were just, oh, you know, everyone knows a guy like that. Everyone knows a guy like that. Everyone knew the girl like that, you know. Mm-hmm. That's why people liked
it. Why didn't you get invited to the in-betweeners 10-year anniversary?
I
disaster.
Knew that was coming.
What happened? What happened?
Should we have an emergency question?
That was it.
Okay, how do I... Oof.
There's going to be some tricky ones in there.
Yeah, okay.
You could just be honest. You said you're a very open, honest person.
Okay, okay.
Be very honest.
Okay. I think sometimes in the industry, as things progress and things happen and people move on, and certain people then kind of go, oh, fucking hell.
Which one of them's the dick? No, there's one.
Oh, God, I'm this close to saying it.
Well, it's not Joe Thomas because he's lovely.
Oh, no, Joe Thomas is lovely.
I'm going to do
it. Oh, no!
Simon Bird seems very nice.
Simon Bird is lovely. Simon Bird is lovely.
You were in Dad's Army the tour.
Oh, thank God, we've moved on. Brilliant.
So it must be the other one.
No.
It didn't go very well, so it's a good job you weren't there, isn't it?
Well, it was lovely to hear how, you know, people saying, oh, you know, you should have been there. It was very nice. It was very nice to hear that.
Well, it was, I mean, I think it was, you know, those, the four main guys obviously were the show, but it was, what was beautiful about that show, I think, was the peripheral characters. Like, the truth of it was great, but also, you know, Greg Davies was fantastic.
Yes.
And, you know, and all the other students really, they were the paedophile teacher, which I auditioned for and didn't get. It's the first time I've ever auditioned for a pervert and not been accepted for the...
So, were you not invited to the actual night? Because I think every other fucker was, apart from me.
What did you do to them? You must have scarred them.
No.
You're so nice.
It's just snobbery, I think, in certain areas.
We'll come back to it. So, have a bit more vodka. We can get you some more. Right, this is a new emergency question, and I didn't get an answer from Satnam Sangeri, so I'm going to try you. What is the weirdest reason you ever skived off school? I'll give you an example. Someone who answered this on Twitter for me said, Brian Jacks out of judo was visiting, and I didn't want to meet him. I once skived off school because I don't know why they announced it. And this is the second time I'm telling the story. But we were going to make tea and coffee in home economics. I was about 10 years old, and I was terrified they'd make me drink tea or coffee. And so I pretended I was ill and didn't go into school. Did you ever skive off for a stupid reason?
Oh, God.
Did you ever skive off?
Yes.
I'm guessing you did skive off sometimes.
I was very naughty at school. I was a nice person. I wasn't mean or anything like that, but I just looked at it as a waste of time. I knew what I wanted to do, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. I hated it. Hated school. God, this is going to make me get the violins out, but there was I was quite bullied at school. I was very badly bullied, and there was this one time where this horrible little shit in my class had printed out this picture of me, and it was part of like an art class that we had to take really silly pictures of each other, pulling a silly face, and I pulled a really stupid face. And he printed off about 1,000 copies of this photo of me, like, and he posted it everywhere. And I'm talking like in every single village you can imagine, with my phone number on it, saying, call this number for sex. I swear to God. And so it was awful. And so I knew that that was all going on, and I didn't go into school that day because I was so humiliated.
Wow, that's
that's horrible, isn't it?
It's not like my whimsical story about tea and coffee. Brian Jacks, is it? Was it Brian Jacks who did that to you?
I just used to go to McDonald's all the other times on the train.
That's just so, like, it's so typically a teenage boy to say, you know, to ring this number for sex. Yeah. It's just so not ridiculous. Understanding even how...
I got so many phone calls as
did
well.
Did you?
Yeah, chuffed. I'd be really annoyed if I didn't.
You were pulling a funny face, though, so, you know, that's a good sign. What is the best thing? Here's a new emergency question. This might elicit even more sympathy. What is the best thing you ever lost and then found again?
Oh.
Ooh. Hard, that one.
My dignity.
You sure you found it again?
No. I knew you'd say that. Best thing lost and found again. Okay, right. So when I was really, really young, I had these, I called them my special dollies, and I had all these dolls, like these babies. They were my babies. God, they were my girls. Like, they were my life. I think I was about 22. No. I was, I don't know, must have been about seven, six or seven, and I had these special dollies, and I had them in this massive, like, satchel thing. And we went on holiday, and, oh, bless my dad, I'd left them. We'd got on the plane, and I'd realised I'd left this huge bag of dollies in, like, KFC or something in the thing. You wouldn't be able to do this now. My dad, he was like, right, no, got off the plane, managed to go all the way back through security, found my satchel of special dollies and brought them back to me. Oh. And no, no idea where they are now.
Left them on holiday. Yeah. I was trying to get rid of them, Dad.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So, look, you're doing a stand-up tour. Like, yeah. This is quite a bold departure, I would
say. Can everyone stop saying that? They're making me really
scared. You know, stand-up's really hard. You have to be really good to be the kind of stand-up who can bring two disparate people together in love. You have to be pretty amazing. So, I mean, you've performed all your life, so and you obviously do lots of impressions, and you're, I'm assuming, a good singer.
Yeah, I sing, yeah.
So it's not like a massive leap, but was that was a decision you made before the jungle?
Yeah, yeah. It was just that thing of going, I was sort of sick of auditioning for things and not getting them, and everything was just going at a really placid rate. So I was like, right, all the people out there that are doing really well are the people that are writing their own stuff. So people are going, why don't you write a sitcom? Too much work, too much money. And I thought, what if I just write a show, that might be a laugh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going through this phase at the moment in life where I'm thinking, right, everything's really scary, but I'm just going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
It's essentially just me, it's called Talk 30 to me. And, yeah, and it's about, it's a kind of a humorous look, hopefully, at the panics of approaching 30. I'm 29, I've just turned 29, and I can't believe it. Can't believe I'm 30 this year.
That's really old.
Well, but the funny thing is, I saw your DVD and it was, I'm 50.
Yeah.
I nearly called mine, oh, fuck, I'm 30.
Well, there you go. I've already done, oh, fuck, I'm, so I did, oh,
but
fuck, I'm 40. I didn't do a 30 show.
I didn't know that.
So we can combine, we can now put that as a 30, 40, because I didn't do the 30.
Yeah. Well, it's that whole thing, isn't it? I feel like in life, we're taught about puberty and how difficult that's going to be. Fine. We're sort of, we're told about the menopause or a midlife crisis that you're probably going to get later down the line. But this part of life, no one really teaches you about.
No.
It's almost like you still feel like you're 18 years old, and yet people are going, right, you've got to be a grown-up now. You've got to now pay bills on time. You've got to learn how to drive. Can't drive. you've got to stop dropping things and stop being an absolute moron. And I just don't know how to do that.
Well, it's true, but honestly, I feel the same, and I'm 50.
Yeah.
What, 50? I'm only
72. I know, you make me feel a bit better. You make me feel a bit better.
So you can carry on. I think 30 was the worst, what, decade for me. Like, so, like, 40 was, I did have a kind of breakdown at 40, but it wasn't as bad as 30. I was genuinely really, really unhappy about.
Yeah.
It does feel like a big deal, because I think, like, all the way through your 20s, but, you know, no offence, but you're a fucking idiot when you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, it's, it all gets better.
Does
but,
it?
Yeah, well, I was a really, I was a real idiot in my 20s. So it's you know, the minute I turned 30, it wasn't a problem. Whereas the minute I turned 40, it was still a problem.
Yeah.
When I turned 30, I went, oh, it's fine. But the build up to it was really awful, because it is sort of leaving.
Do you remember, what were you doing at 30? Do you remember what you did for your 30th birthday or anything?
I went to Goblins in Balham, where we used to, which is a little wine bar,
right,
which we used to go to a lot, and had a party in there. Two of my friends met at that party. I'm very good at bringing people together, and I was always just alone. I forgot I'm married, aren't I? Yeah, shit. I'm married, I've got two kids, I'm fine. Two of my friends got together at that party, and are still together. So they've been married for 22 years nearly. We've been together 22 years. So we had a big thing, and it was 97. So it was a beautiful time. I was on TV still.
So, you were doing great at 30.
I was, and then it all went wrong, and now look at me, 20 years later. Look at me now, just talking to... You didn't even win,
I'm a
Celeb.
Talking to the runner-up of I'm a Celeb.
Tried to get Harry out in Redknapp, he was nowhere.
Fuck off.
No, it's good. I think life gets... The older you get, the life gets better to up to an extent, and then things start dropping off.
Well, mine are already dropping off.
Mine are already dropping off.
Oh, dear.
Well, it'd be really interesting to see. So, what you haven't written the show yet. You start in April.
All right,
you've
don't sold, tell everyone.
You've sold every ticket.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Got an extra show. Is that sold out as well?
Yeah, nearly. 22nd of... Oh, no, you won't care. You definitely won't care.
They would love to.
22nd of May, we've added another Clapham date. Due to popular demand. Brilliant. Haven't written it yet, so... But no, I have. I've written like the first half an hour. But I know what the premise is and I know what I want it to be. Yeah. It's very scary for me. It's very daunting. But I kind of talk about that in the show as well. I want people to feel like they're just sort of sat with... We're just sat in a living room chatting and I've got like a drinks cabinet behind me and things like that. And
I think if you're selling out, it's a lot easier. You know, I think the thing is when you start doing stand-up comedy, if you're starting and playing to 5 or 6 people, that's really difficult.
Yeah.
You've got people who want to see you.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fine.
Yeah, maybe.
The first 5 minutes and then you're really going to have to start delivering what they're going to ask.
But I'm panicking. I'm panicking because I've got all these lovely young girls tweeting me going, I'm so happy my mum's just booked the tickets to come and see you. I'm like, you look 12. This is not for you. It's not.
It's fine. The teenagers have the best sense of humour and they know all this stuff. They know everything. We were talking to John Ronson last week. They know everything.
Yeah.
They know things even you could never have dreamt of. Even though you're young as well, I mean, I'm not saying you were a 10-year-old sex addict. That's how that came out. Even you, with your reputation, even you as a 10-year-old didn't know these things. That wasn't what I meant. So I'm glad I clarified that, or it could have seemed rude. But people have talked about you, but that's not the reason I said. But they know, because they've seen everything. They know everything. It's easy doing comedy, just be rude for ages.
Yeah.
Dude, you've got half an hour, then just swear at people. That's my advice.
Swearing.
Kids, I think, have the best... when you're a teenager and that kind of age, you've got... You know, there isn't much else in your life. And, like, music or comedy or whatever is the most important thing. And you study it and you really know what's good.
Yeah.
I think. And so I think teenage... I was into comedy when I was... 10, 11, I was watching or listening to Derek and Clive, which was incredibly inappropriate. It's fine. Mm. You won't be as bad as Derek. You won't be as rude as Derek and Clive.
But that's the thing. I want sort of young girls or like people who wouldn't really think about going to a comedy gig or to the theatre. I want to kind of create something that those people who think, oh, I'm not posh enough for the theatre, I want them to come and enjoy my show and just have a hoot.
Yeah. And you know, I think the celebrity thing showed you're a great role model, but you are, you know, you're a regular person. And you were happy with not having makeup on and things like that. And I think that's a great...
And in this day and age, with social media and things like that, I feel like it's... there's so much pressure on young people, without getting too political, there's so much pressure on young people to look a certain way and be perfect. Mm-hmm. And I'm just... And I think not everybody gets to experience something like The Jungle, you know, being on television and things like that, where all of a sudden you are in the public eye and you do have a voice. And it is important sometimes to speak for other people that don't necessarily, that might not have that voice. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And it's really fun when you got, because the little kids always seem to sit in the front row and then you can just go, you're going to learn some stuff tonight, and then just be much ruder than you're going to be. And it's, mate, honestly, everyone loves it.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, how old are you? 12? That's a bit fucking young, isn't it?
So, you know, for a nation that says they love kids, people, you know, don't. They like to see them humiliated. When you were 5 years old, you fell over at the ballet. I just want to bring that up.
How do you know that?
I know everything about you. I do a lot of research.
That's mental. How do you know?
I know everything.
No, that's weird. Where have I spoken about that?
If you've said it, I know it.
Oh, that's my God. Yeah, it was like the most traumatising.
Have you got an Alexa in your house? That's how I know.
That's so strange. Yeah, it was one of the most traumatising things ever. And I don't think I've ever been the same since.
No, you told the loose women about it. You've been on Dancing and Ice.
Oh, that'll do it, yeah. I think I was younger, like 4 or 5. Yeah, and I came out, I was, I had my tutu on, like getting really ready, getting prepped. And I came out, all the parents were watching. And I came out, did my bit, and I went arse over tit on my face, flat on my face. And I'll never forget the sound of that hit the floor and all the parents going, ooh. It was awful.
Don't worry, it'll be exactly like when you start your tour. So you'll hear it again. You're going to hear that noise.
Cheers, mate.
The show you haven't written. You're going to be fine. You met Bross recently.
Oh, my God, Bross. Oh, my... Right, okay, so the Bross documentary, if you've seen the Bross documentary, the best thing since The Office, it's the best thing in the world. And I met them, and I couldn't believe it. They wear a full face of foundation, like stunning double wear Yves Saint Laurent, mm-hmm. like proper... And bright blue lenses and thick black mascara fit. Fancied them both.
Yeah, I was at school with Bross.
Were you?
Yeah, it's going to come every time we talk about Bross. It was mentioned in the last podcast that you were on it. For a year they came to live in Cheddar and fell in school. I discussed this with my last guest in Wolverhampton, though, but one of them doesn't look very much like the other. Well, they both don't look like the other one, but they're...
It's true, actually.
They're twins.
Yeah.
How do you account for that? How do you account for Matt still having loads of hair and not loads of a sort of skull face like the other one's got?
They were so lovely.
They are nice. They're nice boys.
They smelt very nice.
I bet they did.
And do you know, that documentary, though, that I loved that documentary because, okay, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
But
it actually... It broke my heart as well. Like it really did. And you know, you get to know people like that. And yes, it's that thing, isn't it, of watching characters like the David Brents of the world. And you know, we, even though we kind of go at things that they say, you still want them to win in the end. There's something so lovable about people like that. And I think that's what they had. Whoever directed that is a genius.
He is a genius.
Genius.
And I do know who it is. I tweeted it. I've watched it twice.
Mm.
I bought the Blu-ray so I could watch the extras. They're not it's not worth it. They're fine, but there aren't enough of them. It should be like another hour of stuff. He tweeted me and thanked me, and it is brilliantly put together. But I mean, it fell into his lap a little bit.
Imagine filming that, yeah. Going, oh my god, this is, oh my god, it's perfect.
But I think, you know, but there's a drama to it. It's an amazing thing because it's much more than the comedy of it.
Completely.
But also it's what we're talking about. It's about fame and the fickle nature of fame and the way those guys were chewed up and spat out. That's the danger. Not, I mean, I think you come from such a showbiz and stable background with showbiz that I'm sure you'll be inured to any of this kind of stuff. But it's that way that they were risen up as, you know, same age as you, young performers. And then, I mean, it's weird. They sort of sabotaged it himself.
Yeah, but...
the skull-faced one. he messed up.
But to watch people like that, to watch...
Which
someone...
one did you like best out of the two of them when you watched it? Which one were you identified
with? As in...
When were you watching it, which one did you feel sorry for and which one did you identify with?
Well,
because for me... I watched it twice. Literally changed between the two.
Right, okay.
First time...
Oh my God, first time you think Matt's a bit of a dickhead. Yeah. And then the second time you go, actually, I see what Luke's on about.
Yeah.
I'm more on his side. Yeah, you changed.
I was the other way around. I thought Luke was done by to begin with, and I thought, nah, he's a prick. Matt's worked hard his whole life. This guy's turning up. He hasn't...
Really?
He should have turned up and going, look, I haven't drummed for 25 years. Give me a break. I'm not going to be very good. Right? Mm. But he turned up like, can I just say that this should go like this? Going to the other musicians, I'd like to try and be a bit better at being musicians. Be a bit more like Flea from the Chili's, you know. I've got my band t-shirt to prove that I'm a real musician, because that's what... I've got all different ones every day to prove that I'm a musician, because I know some bands. I love them both. I love them. I would love to have you as guests on the podcast, guys. We talk about Fairlands Middle School, Conkers. We were allowed to play Conkers at Fairlands Middle School. I'd have bought my dartboard if I'd known. I could have had my dartboard. I'd have given it them.
They're actually really talented musicians
which
I didn't know. You sort of look at that 80s cheesiness a bit and you kind of go, oh yeah, whatever. But actually, when you watch them, they're talented musicians. Mm.
The music is really bad.
It's just
genuinely bad. It's genuinely...
No.
Bad music.
It's
no. If there's a place in your heart for me, it's not as good as that. And why is that? When are Prima Donna getting back together? I think a couple of them are dead. So let's they should still do it. You were presented Blue Peter.
Yes, I did.
I know everything about you.
I don't know how I got that gig with my filthy mouth. Presented. It was the first time I've ever hosted something live. Yeah, it was great.
Who are your Blue Peter team from childhood that you remember most fondly?
Connie Huck.
Okay. Yeah.
And there was the other guy. What's the guy's name? Simon something, who now is a sports presenter.
Simon.
He's like fit.
Yeah. Simon Thomas.
Simon Thomas, yeah. I remember watching his audition process to get in the Blue Peter gig. It was like a really big deal. After school, we were like racing to get back to see who got the Blue Peter gig. And he got it. I remember having a crush on him for a very long time. But yeah, that's all I remember, yeah.
Mine's Valerie Singleton, Peter Purvis and John Noakes. That is my...
I don't know.
And Shep, was there only Petra? Frida the Tortoise?
I don't know who
Christopher Trace, is that his name? I don't remember him. William Hartnell was in it.
Don't know.
Patrick McGoohan was in it, do you remember him?
No.
I'm so old. Connie Huck.
Yeah.
She tried to kill me on a boat, Connie Huck. She steered a boat into me and tried to kill me.
No.
Yeah.
That's not something Connie Huck would do.
She's evil. She looked nice on Blue Peter. Richard Bacon, do you remember old Richard Bacon having to resign because of his... Remember that? Were you shocked by that, or you thought he's a good guy?
I'm not shocked. Okay. I don't really remember that.
No.
Really, no.
Okay.
I'm
Bacon was ill last year,
yes.
Were you hoping he would die?
That's
what I heard.
I saw him walking down the street.
That's what James Buckley told me about you.
Oh
You saw Richard Bacon walking down the street?
Yeah, I saw him walking down the street. I was like, I thought he was dead. I thought he died.
No, he got better. Oh, it was touch and go.
Oh.
He's been on this.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, he was good. Oh. I was kind of hoping he'd die.
So nasty, he can't say
that. And then people would have gone back and watched the thing. It's a nice thing. It's like a little tribute, isn't it, to people, this podcast. When you die, people will watch this.
Go, I mean, you need to take this off of me ASAP.
Who's that man from the 21st century?
I can just feel like my agent's arse cheeks clenching more and more as this goes on. Sorry.
Sorry, I knew you would get that. So you're going to do the celebrity juice job as well? Give me that exclusive. This isn't going out for a month, so you can tell me.
So, no.
Oh.
As far as I know, somebody has already been put in place, and they were put in place a long time ago.
Okay, who was it?
I can't tell you. Okay. But there's a very big chance that I'll be on there a lot. Oh, I'll be the Rufus Hound of celebrity juice, sitting on the side. I love all those people, and I'll always go on celebrity juice. I love it. But no, as far as I know, I don't have that gig.
Still free crisps. Free many crisps you can eat.
Yeah, they're kicking themselves.
You can take them in. I'll do the catering. It's all fun. Victoria Wood. Did you work with Victoria Wood? You're on a Victoria Wood.
Yeah, so my mum and her were very good friends. They worked together for years. And I got a little role with her. What was it called? Lark Rise to Cranchesterford, though they changed it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like a spoof of Lark Rise to Candleford. I don't know. You know more than me.
I don't really.
Oh no. I worked. Yeah, it was great.
How was that?
It was great.
Was she kind to you?
Yeah.
Good. She's nice. She was a nice lady.
Yeah, I've known her my whole life. Do you know my earliest memory of her? I went to a Steps concert, and it was me and Mum. God, I sound so fucking middle class, don't I? I went to a Steps gig with Victoria Wood.
That's what we do, middle classes.
But like it was me, Mum, Victoria Wood, and Julie Walters.
My God, Julie Walters went to see.
Sorry,
Victoria and Julie? Did they enjoy the Steps concert very much?
I can't believe they even sat through. And it was for me, Martha, and George, my brother and sister, and Victoria's kids, and. I don't know why Julia Walters was there, to be honest. But yeah, so we all went to this Steps gig, and then Dawn French and Lenny Henry came over, and we were all like chatting, and I was like, Mom, I just want to meet H from Steps. Like, I don't give a shit about this. I want to meet H. Everyone was crowding around Victoria and my mum and everyone. I was like, can I just meet H from Steps? Yeah, that's all I wanted to do. I got to meet H.
Great choice. So I was too shy to talk to Victoria Wood the one time I met her at Buckingham Palace. Yeah, that is better than a fucking Steps gig, isn't it? With Stephen Hawkins was there. They're not all dead, the people who were there. Greg Davis was there as well. Someone check on Greg Davis. Windsor Davis has died, hasn't he? That's good news for Matthew Crosby's wife. So that's
who's
for long-term fans. Don't worry. But who's that? Windsor Davis? How could you not know about the racist sitcom work of Wednesday?
Oh, I don't know.
Shut up. That's what he said. I had a great question for you. It was brilliant. I'm going to ask you something else from here while I get back to my brilliant question that I had. Thank you.
I'll talk more about the Steps gig if you want. Don't worry about it.
If for your money, which STD would win in a World Cup of sexually transmitted diseases?
Sorry, say that. Say
for
that
your one. Money,
yeah.
Which STD, sexually transmitted disease,
yeah.
You know what it means, would win in a World Cup?
What the fuck does that mean?
You're a woman of the world. You know what STD stands for. Sexually transmitted diseases. What's the best one in your
opinion? The best one? Yeah. I think chlamydia is the most glamorous one.
Yeah,
isn't
I went
it?
For chlamydia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've had chlamydia.
Well, you don't want to say warts or herpes or anything that you can imagine.
No.
But chlamydia, you can't really imagine because there are no symptoms.
I said chlamydia is the one I've had the most and is also an excellent name for a posh woman in a poor quality student review sketch.
Oh,
Sorry, that's just the one that came up. Oh, no. What are we going to do?
What's he done?
I've knocked my water over. It's all right. It's no falling on your face when you're 5 years old at the ballet. Come on, let's face it. So,
yeah, chlamydia is the most glamorous one, isn't it?
I think it is.
Yeah.
A lot of them aren't like, oh, look at this. This is going to reach out and touch.
Your chlamydia would you is be like upset? Dribbling over
it
to me.
It is like a metaphor. Would you be upset if you were electrocuted to death during this podcast? We'd still put it out as a tribute, and also because it would get a lot of hits. It would get a lot. If you die, if I die, that's no good to anyone. This is as dangerous as anything you experienced in the jungle. Oh, you've been saved by a table leg. It's acted as a dam. Oh, no, but...
Oh, no.
The water is gathering as it does in a pool.
It really is gathering.
It is. The stage is sloped like that.
Oh, God.
We might all be about to fall into some kind of sinkhole. We're already quite low underground.
Stop trying to get me in a sinkhole.
So, well, what's coming up? There's some film stuff and...
Yeah.
There's some stuff you've done, isn't there? There's some stuff you've actually... That's on IMDb that's coming up, so there's some stuff...
Yeah.
You've been in a film, and this was a while ago, you were in a film with... forgotten who it was. It was with Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, just another film nobody saw. Oh, this was the whole thing. This was the whole reason why I kind of changed things up, because... It's really interesting. You audition for these films that people go, right, this is going to be the one that's going to, it's going to change your life, it's going to be great, working with all these amazing people, which is great. And then you do it and it's great fun. You meet these incredible people that you've always wanted to meet and work with, and then you put it on your CV and then no fucker watches it. But it was fascinating, because what I realised doing these films... I've done, I think, like 13 films now, and I think only one of them has actually been watched. I did a Disney film last year with Jennifer Saunders, and I did the Dad's Army movie Bill Nighy, Catherine Zeta-Jones. No, exactly. No one cares. But then I put a video up, pissed, in my mate's living room of me doing Love Island impressions, and 5 million people watched it and liked it. I was like, right, I've got to change it up a bit. So it was really interesting, because it just kind of made me think, well, in this day and age, you've got to just put yourself out there a bit more.
But it's like, a lot of these things, I mean, I've been in films that I've, not very many, maybe two, but that never even came out.
Yeah.
So, you've don't think because of me.
Well...
Almost Married, you were the star of Almost Married?
Yes. Well, see, that gets played on ITV too.
Oh, does
which,
it?
Yeah, which that's probably...
Is that the best one?
Yeah, that's probably the best one. Probably.
Let's see who's seen Almost Married.
Well, my sister, hi.
Your agent hasn't even seen this film. So it's on ITV too. I'm going to watch it.
It's one of those films that, when you're away and you can't get to sleep and it's midnight and it's on, that kind of thing.
That might be just in your head, just playing. It's about a man who gets an STD when he's about to get married.
Yeah, he gets chlamydia, funnily enough. Yeah, he gets chlamydia.
Let's all rent it. I just want to see how this podcast works. If we can make things spike, then people will come on. If we all go and rent... let's all go and buy the DVD of Almost Married.
I don't even know.
Not just you in the room, everyone at home, buy it the week this comes out.
It's actually quite good.
Let's send it to the top of the charts.
I'm sensational in it.
I'm sure you are. But there's more to come. There's fantastic stuff to come up. And really good luck with the stand-up tour. Stand-up's really easy, honestly. You're going to be fantastic. I'm kidding. It's really easy. All it is about confidence, and you've got the absolute confidence to do it. You'll be brilliant.
Thank you.
It's going to be fantastic. If there are any tickets left, go and see them. Put some more...
Will you come and see it?
Of course I will.
Will you actually?
No.
Cheers, mate. All the best.
I live in Hertfordshire, and...
Are you from Hitchin?
I live near Hitchin.
Yeah, I swear I...
You were born in Luton.
Yeah, so well, not... Don't just say Luton.
Where were you born?
I was... Luton, but
yeah.
I was born in the L&D, but I was raised near Hitchin, Bedford kind of.
Oh,
way.
Yeah, I know Bedford. Yeah. That's Al Murray's territory, but Al Murray went to school in Bedford. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Hitchin, I remember making many mistakes in Hitchin.
Did you?
Yeah, the old heart, I think. Do you remember the pub? Oh, I don't know.
No. I've only lived there for a little while.
All right, sure. Yeah,
so the stories of your childhood there have not permeated through to my village yet, but I'm sure it'll only be a short amount of time. There's enough gossip going on in that town. It's been really lovely to speak to you, and good luck with everything. Thanks so much for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, Emily Ater!
Thanks so much.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Emily Atack. The music is, as always, by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Stripe, especially Chris Evans, not that one. And I would also like to thank the fantastic team at Acast for their lovely support, and Orange Market, the British comedy guy. He's a good guy. I don't care what anyone else says about him. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. This is a Go Faster Stripe production. It's also a Fuzz production. It's also a Sky Potato production. It goes out on the internet. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks very much for listening. Go to richchang.com/gigs to find out where I will be performing over the next few months and years until I sadly die. If I'm dead already, just look a bit sad. And go to rahalastapa.co.uk and you can get behind our paywall for money. It's lovely back there, I tell you. Wall-to-wall wanking.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who's said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show. If you enjoyed it, if you want to see me, that'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.